President Biden is on a whirlwind tour of Europe to promote unity and to support millions of Ukrainian refugees fleeing into Poland and other countries. But here's the rub for Europeans. Natural gas. They rely on a constant flow of it from Russia.
The European Union has ratcheted up the pressure with sanctions, but notably, it's also making huge exceptions to keep the Russian gas flowing. Let's hear more about the situation in Europe with EU Ambassador to the United States, Stavros Lambrinidis. Ambassador, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Biden announced a task force today to cut down on how dependent Europe is on Russian fuel by next winter. Now, looking at the proposal, it looks like cutting down means 15 billion cubic meters, but the EU imports more than 10 times that from Russia. So if this task force is successful, won't Putin still control a large portion of Europe's energy needs?
Well, certainly he controls a very large portion now, but the plan is to decouple from Putin by the end of this decade. And we're beginning now with this announcement between the President of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, and President Biden for the initial 15 billion cubic meters this year alone. Now, on top of that, we will add our own increased consumption of renewable energy and a number of major energy efficiency measures that we are taking as we speak, which are about another 15 or 20 BCMs. That means in the end of the day that we'll be able to already win away from Russian gas by the end of this year very substantially, which is our goal.
It will be difficult, though, to make this transition, and I wonder if that pain will be felt by families in Germany or France or European allies in the midst of this decade-long transition.
Well, there's no question. There's no question that that's the case. But we decided, and we decided this even before Putin began his war in Ukraine, that Europe, which does not have itself fossil fuels, would have to grow its own homegrown energy. And that means primarily and fundamentally green energy and renewables. And would also have to, in the meantime, move away from dependence on Russia and dependence on democratic allies such as the United States. And this is precisely what we're doing now. So it's a process. It's not going to happen tomorrow. It cannot. So we already have a whole system of support of our member states in place. We are allowing them to support particularly vulnerable consumers of gas, to support companies that use it to produce anything from electricity to anything else. So we are going to be taking care of this pain. There's no question it's going to be a lot of that. But, you know, we just came out of COVID. And this invasion of Putin, these actions are existential to us. It's an existential threat. And frankly, we know that freedom has a high price and we are paying it. And we are happy to pay it.
I mean, speaking of paying prices, there are discussions about further sanctions. We know that many of these sanctions that have been instituted so far are hitting Russian oligarchs and politicians very hard. But they also seem to be hitting the average family of four in Moscow as well, the average Russian people. I wonder if you're concerned about the effect this may have in terms of resentment among Russian people towards the EU and others, the same kind of thing that we saw after NATO expansion in the 90s.
Yes, well, indeed, I think you're absolutely right. The sanctions are being extremely effective because they're the most united, the most extensive sanctions ever placed on any country by the European Union and the United States together and a number of other allies. So the sanctions are targeted, but they are huge. And they will bring a major toll on the Russian economy, and we see this today. The oligarchs are the ones who are particularly targeted, of course, at this stage. And I have to say that when I saw Putin give that very strange speech a few days ago about, quote-unquote, spitting them out and self-cleansing of Russia, these very Stalinist sort of sounding things, you know, I realize that our sanctions are most likely biting hard those oligarchs, and maybe some of them are whispering to him to stop. But yes, there's no question these sanctions will affect the broader Russian economy, and they will bring a major recession to the Russian economy. In the end of the day, there are many people today, in spite of Putin's attempt to choke off any independent reporting of his war, there are many people in Russia who are getting information through social media and elsewhere about why this is happening. And those people are increasingly going to be turning against Putin. I have to tell you, I think that Putin is going to leave a very, very dark legacy. And he is, without a doubt, the worst enemy of the Russian people today.
Let's talk about the refugee crisis. The United States has announced it'll take in 100,000 refugees, but that's a pretty small portion of the 4 million who fled Ukraine. What kind of support can the EU give, first to a country like Poland, where they've taken in more than half of those 4 million refugees?
We are already giving, and we have announced close to 3.5 billion euros, which is close to, $4 billion, to all the European member states that are bearing the brunt of this, major fleeing from Ukraine, of fundamentally and primarily women and children, which is really shocking. So we already have given protection to them. They can work immediately in any EU member country they go to. Their kids can go to school. They can have free health care and all those things that come with protecting them. We will not allow Mr. Putin to kill their spirit, even if he is trying to kill them on the ground. And in the end of the day, they will be able, we hope, to return, because of our support in Europe, back to a free Ukraine, where they never wanted to leave. Keep in mind, a young 8-year-old girl going now to a school in Italy or in Poland or in Hungary, she never wanted to leave Ukraine. She didn't want to leave her friends behind. She didn't want to go to a school where she doesn't speak the language. This is a result of Putin's aggression. And so as much as we are protecting those people with all the force of the European Union and all the generosity and solidarity of the European people, we want to make sure that Putin does not succeed and they can go back to their homes.
What do you make of criticism that there's a seemingly stark difference between the way EU nations have welcomed Ukrainian refugees versus refugees, black and brown migrants from Africa and the Middle East?
Well, that's not accurate, but I have heard it. And when it comes to now in Ukraine, you know, there are thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people in Ukraine fleeing today who are from Africa, who are from Asia, who were living in Ukraine, had either protection there as refugees or had long-term stays. And all these people, all of them, every one of them, is equally covered by the European Union's temporary protection right now. This war, however, let's make clear, is by magnitudes different, in my view, than anything we've seen in the 21st century. And in this case, therefore, you can understand why the outpouring of support is unmistakable. What is at stake is so stark and so existential for all of us, Americans, Europeans, and others who believe in freedom and in democracy.
One last question for you. Not long after Russia attacked Ukraine, President Zelensky signed the application for Ukraine's membership in the EU. Yesterday, Ukraine's deputy prime minister wrote an op-ed saying, please accept our membership bid. What is happening with the process of Ukraine's application to the EU?
Well, I think it was a very important step because it was a very important step of indicating Ukraine's and also Moldova's and Georgia's absolute right to aspire to membership to the EU. And that's why the EU leaders also accepted unanimously the submission of those applications. There is a process there, of course, and the European Commission is going to issue very shortly in expedited procedures its opinion on those applications. And then, of course, there will be a process to ensure that all the countries, come even closer to the European law that is required in order to be able to be a member. The European Union is not a club. It is a very strong, united economic and value space. But already in Ukraine, this process has been going on for a long while. So you can be assured that this process will continue now and will intensify.
EU Ambassador to the United States, Stavros Lambrinidis. Thank you so much, Ambassador.
Thank you so much. Much appreciated.